You're listening to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm Beth Ruriak. Melinda Welsh is writing a different story lately. She's the founding editor of the Sacramento News and Review. She stepped down in 2012, and not too long after that, she was diagnosed with cancer. The cancer became stage 4 and terminal, and then the game changer came along called immunotherapy. Melinda's in the studio. I am going to ask her now to read the headline of her cover story. It's in the latest Sactown magazine.
How I faced, fought, accepted, beat terminal cancer.
Melinda Welsh, thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Beth.
It's great to see you. What an amazing time in your life this is.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Well, I sometimes still really don't know how to feel.
When the cancer was at its worst, how bad was it?
Well, I was, you know, about a year and a half into cancer. You know, I'd had all of the other surgeries and chemotherapy and radiation, et cetera. You know, I was told that the cancer had spread, that it had gone metastatic. So I was terminal, you know, pretty soon got those prognoses from doctors. You know, and it's devastating, but it also kind of wakes you up. You know, it makes you realize, you know, how precious the time you have left is. And then you make some choices based on that.
This is February 2019. Did you think you'd be alive today?
Oh, gosh, no. I didn't think I'd make it to my, you know, 60th birthday. I'm unimaginably fortunate to be sitting here right now.
The circumstances in your life are so powerful. Can you tell me how you are now in mind, body, and spirit? I really want to hear this as a whole person view.
Yeah. You know, I in mind, I'm definitely, you know, intellectually clear that, you know, I was saved by new, you know, breakthroughs in medicine, new medicines that use the body's natural fighting mechanism to fight cancer, the immune system. So I'm very clear on that mentally. You know, physically and spiritually, it's, you know, I don't know, an education that everything is comes together. I guess somehow I feel, though I know I owe my life to a great doctor, my doctor, Dr. Alan Alghazi, and these new medicines, I'm also, you know, humbled by the whole experience. And I guess that's how I feel spiritually and otherwise.
What does your doctor say to you about the cancer, about your health now?
Well, I now live with this paradox, which is I am cancer-free. in full remission, but I still have the diagnosis of metastatic cancer. I still have to check in every 3 or 4 months get a body scan and make sure the cancer hasn't reappeared. But you know, this was such big news to my husband and I when he first told us this, that my husband Dave emailed Dr. Alghazi the next morning saying, just to be clear, you know, we couldn't believe it. So he just wanted clarity. And so he just said, just to be clear, can we say Melinda is in remission and that she's cancer free? And Dr. Alghazi emailed back very quickly saying, yes, yes, yes. You know, like we hadn't misheard. It really had happened that I was cancer free. So, yeah.
Your husband, Dave Webb, so yeah. Many people in town know and work with,
yeah.
And your wedding picture
yeah.
is in the magazine as well. It's fun to look back in time. Let's go back in the cancer. I said you left Sacramento News and Review in 2012. In 2013, how was this cancer found? What happened at the beginning?
Well, I actually stepped down as editor in 2012, but I kept writing for the paper till 2015. But I, the cancer was found in 2014, and then it was 2015 when it went metastatic. That's kind of the timeline of events. And in the beginning, you know, like any cancer patient, you start into treatment and you kind of do what your doctor says to do and get the surgeries and you do the chemotherapy and the radiation. And, you know, I know any cancer patient can relate to, you know, the fear that goes along with that and also... you know, the warm feeling of at least having a path ahead of treatment. But then when you get the metastatic news, you know, it's spread that's when you really face some big choices, I guess.
It was a lump initially,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So what's the specific cancer? Because your doctor is a skin cancer expert.
Yes.
Is this a melanoma?
Yeah, it's not a melanoma, but it is most of my doctors, deduced that it was a skin cancer. It's officially metastatic squamous cell carcinoma of unknown primary. That means they never did find a primary. So it was a rare for a squamous cell cancer. It's when you don't find a primary, sometimes that means it's from the skin. And I had other reasons to believe it was from skin cancer. And that's, I think, part of what made me a responder to immunotherapy.
We're going to get to the immunotherapy part in a moment. But going back to one of the two essays that you wrote for the LA Times, this is one from December 2015. It's headlined, "I Have Terminal Cancer. I'm Dying in a Year-ish."
Yeah.
That was such a great word because it really became the catchword for this vague timetable that said your sand is running down through the hourglass.
That's right. We can't tell you exactly when, but it's a year-ish.
And the phrase that the doctors used, according to this essay, was, "I'm sorry, we did find cancer."
Yes.
So the question you asked then was, how do I best spend the time I have left? And I wonder, in all the writing you've done, if that isn't the overarching question here, that cancer and treatments, of course, are important and we need to focus there. But as you just said, you kind of snap to attention about what life is all about.
Correct. You just become aware of, in becoming aware of your own mortality, you become aware of all our common mortality. You know, we are all going to die. And you know, this, especially in a time like now when people can be so divided over politics or culture, gender, race, you know, it's kind of a wake-up call to go, wait a minute, we are all mortal, and there is more that unites us than divides us.
I'm talking with Melinda Welsh. Her cover story is in the latest issue of Sactown magazine. She wrote back in 2015 in that same essay, "My new oncologist, a research scientist doing cutting-edge work in personalized medicine, is trying to get me into clinical trials that don't come replete with debilitating side effects. I've started gene therapy that has shown promise in other patients." All of that was at the very beginning,
yes,
of this new frontier you were going to move into.
Exactly.
So now talk about what this immunotherapy is.
Yeah. Well, there's a fellow, a Dr. Siddhartha Mukherjee, who wrote The Emperor of All Maladies, which is a great book about, won a Pulitzer Prize about cancer. And he says, we have entered a mapless moment in cancer. And meaning, you know, there have been, for so many decades, there have been promises of cures for cancer that never did come through. But suddenly, oncologists are optimistic because this is something is really happening here with immunotherapy that gives hope to oncologists and therefore to all of us, people who have cancer or have loved ones with cancer or may someday get cancer, that it may someday be more like a chronical illness versus a terminal killer disease.
Mm. So the common name, the brand name of the medicine that turned things around for you is?
Well, I had many. I think one of the main ones was Keytruda, the brand name, which is the Jimmy Carter drug. That's the immunotherapy drug that Jimmy Carter took when he thought he had weeks to live. And within months, he was cancer free. So that's one of the big ones. But I had multiple different immunotherapy trials throughout this process, and the final tumors disappeared, not thanks to Keytruda, but thanks to another treatment, another genetically engineered virus that was injected into my tumors, and had over a year had the response of eliminating the cancer from my cells.
Keytruda is really new.
Yeah.
It was, I guess, first developed because of a protein isolated in Japan in the 1990s, yes, which is recent, and then in the Netherlands in 2006.
Yes.
It was just coming on the market at the time of your treatment, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I was incredibly fortunate to be able to utilize that, get that drug. And it wasn't easy, but there was, you know, I was so fortunate to have good insurance and a great doctor. And so that's somehow how I lined up with the treatment schedule that I had. But, you know, like any cancer patient knows, there's times when you don't get what you've asked for from the insurance company, denies you. You know, you have to kind of do battle sometimes to get what you and your doctor think is the right treatment.
And it's expensive.
And it's very expensive.
It's about $40 per treatment, which alone doesn't sound like a lot. And sometimes insurance covers it and sometimes it doesn't. But how many treatments?
Well, it can be up to $100,000 a year, more than $100,000 a year to get, like if you were getting Keytruda infusions every 3 weeks, which is what they do. So that's incredibly expensive. And, you know, if you're lucky, like I am, you have insurance coverage that either pays for it or you find another way, which is how I happened to get the drug, because my cancer was not FDA approved for this particular drug. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's kind of like you're, you know, threading a needle to try to get what you know you want and you really think might work.
I think it's a lung cancer drug, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, small cell lung cancer and melanoma.
Which is why.
And then it became FDA approved for head and neck long after I'd already begun it.
Your story was told by a PBS NewsHour team, and we'll post a link to that story. In that same episode, there's a conversation with a journalist and a doctor, and we do have a little bit of sound from that story. And this is Dr. Jeffrey Bluestone, and he is the CEO of the Parker Institute for Cancer Immunotherapy.
Yeah, we're certainly at absolutely the change inflection point. The world has changed for cancer therapy with immunotherapy. It's hard to even explain how different this approach is. Instead of using poisons to kill cancer or to wipe out the cancer cell, we're actually using our own body to do this. So in this kind of transformational science, there's a lot to learn. We have to learn what are the fundamental rules. And we have to learn how to moderate the drugs in a way that maximize the efficacy and minimize the toxicity. But I cannot imagine that over the next 10 years, we don't start seeing a dramatic change in the long-term survival of many of the patients with many of the cancers. We've already seen it in melanoma. We've gone from 5% five-year survival to 40% five-year survival. We've seen it in certain lung cancers. So yes, we're right at the beginning, but we're already seeing a dramatic change in a lot of these patients. And I believe this new science, and it truly is bringing together the science of the immune system and immunology with the science of cancer in ways that we could never have believed we would be at this point. So sure, I'm optimistic. I'm excited. I'm every day I go to work. I just can't believe we're in this world we live in now.
How about that?
I can't believe it either.
That was Dr. Jeffrey Bluestone, CEO of the Parker Institute for Cancer Immunotherapy. It's pointed out that immunotherapy doesn't work on all cancers.
Correct.
It also doesn't work for all people,
correct,
even if the right cancer match. And then there's this possibility of developing a side immune disorder.
Correct. Yes, there is. And it's a kind of rare thing to get this immune disorder, but I actually did end up, you know, getting that, having my immune system start to attack healthy organs, basically, is what happens. But
did that at that point mean you could no longer take that
correct
immunotherapy?
That was a time where we thought, oh boy, this is going downhill again. And but then I had the we took another approach, and that worked. So I got very lucky there. But immunotherapy does not work for every cancer, not yet. And it does not always work for patients who have the cancers where it might work. I think it's about 40% of patients who have melanoma, say, or small cell lung cancer, about 40% have a great response. And then there's many who have a partial response. some don't, you know, it just doesn't work still. So, but there's right now over 1,000 clinical trials going on across the globe trying to figure this out, you know, trying to figure out immunotherapy, make it work for other cancers, what combinations, maybe different pathways to the tumors from the immune system will help. And so there's all kinds of work and focus going on in science on this matter.
You're listening to Melinda Welsh. She is a journalist, a writer. She's the founding editor of the Sacramento News and Review. SNNR won more than 5 dozen awards for excellence under her tenure, and she herself won a number of individual awards for investigative reporting and editorial writing. I'm sure it's not lost on you that here you are in the midst of this experience with the talent and the life skills of being a writer and a reporter and saying, up to the heavens, really? This is what you want me to do? This is where you put me?
Right. I'm someone who was used to being kind of behind the scenes and telling other people's stories, and that was kind of my life's work. And then suddenly this happened to me. I can't help it. I'm part of the story now. So I find myself in a situation that would have been uncomfortable, but it is what it is. This happened to me.
I have a friend going through cancer, actually stem cell transplant work right now. And at the very beginning, he was very, very private and people were very protective. Mm-hmm. And now, as he's gone through it, his line is, "My illness is community property."
That's great.
I got the same sense from you, Melinda.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, it started by just when I would say, I have cancer, and then I realized, no, we have cancer, meaning my husband and I, well, because we're both going through all these stages. And then it became more and more like, boy, you know, maybe this situation I'm in allows me to share and help others who are going through similar situations. So it did become more our cancer.
That takes me to another essay you wrote in the LA Times, and the headline of this one is, "Before the Immunotherapy, I Have Terminal Cancer, and I Know My Friends Want to Ask, Are You Dead Yet?"
Yeah.
And that odd place that you were, where people knew the news, they knew what you were facing, and then you'd meet them on the street, and
exactly,
you were reading their eyes.
This was happening to me all the time. You know, people in my community, I live in Davis, and you know, have lived there a long time, have a lot of people would see me on the streets and just be happy to see me walking down the street. But also, you know, I could see that they were confused, you know, aren't you dead yet? That's absolutely what I felt surrounded by. So I wrote an essay about it.
And how is that now? Because that essay was 2+ years ago.
Yeah. I think the people in my life got used to, you know, after the first, you know, year and a half or two of dire news and prognostications, I started to have some good news when immunotherapy and Dr. Agassi entered my life. And so people got used to the good news. So I still have, there are still people who think I must be gone. I'm sure, like, the last time the readers of the News and Review were in Sacramento heard about, unless they read the LA Times or some of the other publications I've written for, they think I'm long gone. And because the last thing I wrote about was kind of a farewell that, you know, mentioned my cancer and the terminal diagnosis and et cetera. So there are still people who are indeed surprised to hear from me or see me and like I'm a ghost that's risen from the dead.
What do you do day in, day out to maintain your health? Because you do write that you played a part. You were very active in activities and foods and nutrition and a number of things.
Mm-hmm. The main thing is, I definitely, you know, get good exercise every day. I eat healthy fruits and vegetable-based diet and, I'm so fortunate to have, you know, a wonderful husband, Dave, and family and friends. And, you know, I because of the experience of facing death too soon, I think I just isolated, like, what's most important to me, who's most important. And I don't ever want to lose those lessons that I learned. You know, don't sweat the small stuff. Focus on what's most important every day. And so I still do that. And so I think just having that attitude, along with, you know, the other, you know, keeping good physical health, keeping a good physical health, and you know, I do mindfulness meditation. You know, I kind of try to use integrative medicine, but you know, that all kind of works together to, you know, to bolster a person. And I try to still embrace that and will for the rest of my life.
Are you on any continuing medicine or treatment?
No, I'm in no treatment for cancer. I'm on no cancer. You know, I have some kind of leftover from surgeries and et cetera conditions, but mostly not at all. I'm healthy and thriving and not on any medication. And it's really strange to not, I'm not even going back to Mount Zion Hospital in San Francisco till April, because that's my next scan. But I was used to, you know, we were commuting in there every other week for years. And so now it's just like, I'm still getting used to it.
That is where your treatment was, UCSF.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. So you have this really startling and unusual perspective as someone who was terminal and looking at the end of life, and someone who's just had the light shown on the future and being told you're completely cancer-free and you get to live again. And what do you know now that you really want to say? And I'm guessing, knowing you, that that's not just to people who have cancer or fighting a terminal illness, and the message is really to all of us.
It's not. You know, it's you know, I feel that I learned something, and I know others who face death learn this too, which is life is beautiful and it's fragile. And, you know, we don't take anything for granted. You know, I guess those are the main, you know, lessons and the main things that I want to, though I'm not now, you know, facing imminent death as I was some years ago, I don't want to forget that that's what I learned. I want to still hold that every day. And I want to hope that in my talking about my story, others can get something from that and see some piece of that as well.
In a very practical sense, we have the internet, and people search symptoms, we search diseases, we search treatments, we search doctors. Do you have some guidance, and to what extent did you use those tools?
I did. I did use my journalistic training throughout this process, and I couldn't help myself. There is a you know, you can kind of get into trouble on the internet looking up diseases and thinking worst case, you know, a lot of times you're not going to find the truth there easily. You know, you kind of, so I was able to use my research skills to identify, you know, some truths out there about my exact disease and what might be my best options going forward, you know, in conjunction with what my doctor thought. But There's a lot of resources about immunotherapy. Ask your doctor if you're in this situation about immunotherapy. Don't hesitate to, you know, find a doctor that's right for you. You know, get a second opinion. You know, be an advocate for yourself, or find a family, a friend who can help you, you know, be an advocate. You know, I hear of a lot of patients who basically just like, here I am, doc, do whatever you have to do. And I believe in this other approach, which is you're in it too. And, you know, that's really what I recommend to people.
What's ahead? This big story is out in Sactown. I imagine that you're hearing from people from all over, just like you did after your pieces in the LA Times. So you're getting feedback and a lot of life experiences. And, you know, here you are in a vibrant next chapter of your life. What do you want to do?
That is such a good question. And the answer is, I really don't know yet. I'm, you know, different things have been proposed to me, and I'm just really not sure. The writing this piece was kind of cathartic because I had written some parts of chapters of all of this, and then just having to write it start to finish, it just happened to be in this 5-year frame, because it was January 5 years ago when I was first told I had cancer, and December, you know, just this last December that I was told I was cancer-free. So, you know, that kind of wrapped up this journey, and that was cathartic. But I'm still not sure exactly what I'll do next. But I know You know, I want to continue to do what I've done before, which is write and try to find purpose in life, try to help others, you know, make the world a better place.
I shouldn't be smiling when I read the very last line of that second essay, but the last line is, no, I'm not dead yet.
Yeah.
Mm-mm,
not dead yet.
Mm. Melinda, thanks so much.
Thank you, Beth. It's been a pleasure.
Glad to have you here, and I look forward to whatever you're going to do next, being able to talk with you about it. That is Melinda Welsh, and this is Insight on CAP Radio.